What are the top 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era? Today on the Ruthless Discussions podcast, episode number 7, we are going to run down my personal list on those top 10 RA feuds. Your list may be different, no problem with that. Drop that in the comments section below. Without further ado, let's get into this week's podcast. All right, what is up, Nation? Noah here, back again for the Ruthless Discussions podcast. A week late, unfortunately, this week's topic was supposed to be last week's topic. However, a content creator's worst nightmare between mic technical difficulties and internet issues, everything was plaguing me last week, and there was just no way I was going to get up a quality Ruthless Discussions podcast last Thursday. So I said, you know what? Instead of rushing something out, we're just going to double up today. It is Thanksgiving, so happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates, and I hope you are having a great day. And if you know, don't got much to do today, well, I hope I fill some of your time with some entertaining Ruthless Aggression era discussion. But today, we're going to be running down the top 10 Ruthless Aggression rivalries of that era. And also, there's going to be a double podcast upload today. Later tonight, we will be reviewing the 2006 Survivor Series event, an event I attended, and with Survivor Series 2023 on our way this Saturday, why not do a little retro review of one of my personal favorite Survivor Series events of all time? Not saying the quality of the show is outstanding, but because I was there, because it is, you know, a Ruthless Aggression show, sentimental to me, it means a lot to me. It's one of my favorite Survivor Series of all time. So we will be dropping that podcast, that review, later tonight on Thanksgiving. But again, today we're going to be talking about the top 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era. And again, this is just my personal list, but we got to talk about some honorable mentions first. Because, you know, there's rivalries on this list that I think are definitely worth being in the top 10, but could definitely maybe be swapped, you know, depending on who you talk to, for some other rivalries. And I know some of these that I'm going to mention on honorable mentions may be in one of your guys' list for the actual top 10. And some of these originally might have been on there and just, you know, kind of did some swapping, really thought about it. Some made some cuts. You guys get the point. So just to run down those honorable mentions, things that didn't make the list, but I do think you can make an argument for Triple H and Shawn Michaels. I think had a great rivalry spanning between 2002 and then back in action in 2004. They mix it up a little bit in 03 and tag team matches and whatnot, but the majority of their, you know, stuff in WWE during the RA era was in 2002 SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Armageddon, and then the triple threats with Benoit in 04, the Hell in a Cell, the Last Man Standing at the Rumble. Some great stuff between Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Had to mention that as an all-time rivalry. Something that probably would have happened during the Attitude Era had Shawn Michaels not gotten hurt. It's probably just, you know, a case of Attitude Era's loss is the RA Era's gain with HBK and Triple H. But that had to be on there for the honorable mentions list. Edge versus Mick Foley. I think a feud where it's not the same case as, say, Randy Orton and Mick Foley, which I would say is an honorable mention as well, where I think the feud with Foley really helped establish Randy Orton as a main event player in WWE. I think Edge was kind of already established, at least in the eyes of the fans, as a main event guy, not just because he was WWE champion earlier, right before the Mick Foley feud, but he was just already there. He was chasing that main event spot for, you know, well over a year on Monday Night Raw. I think he was already there in the eyes of the fans, but this feud with Mick Foley, no pun intended, but just put him over the edge. Edge and Foley at WrestleMania 22, you know, one of the greatest hardcore matches of all time, probably one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time, a match that still gets talked about to this day, especially because of, you know, how it ended with the flaming table spear, which is just an all-time spot in the eyes of the fans. So definitely had to mention that. And then, as I mentioned, Randy Orton and Mick Foley, a little bit different than the Edge situation. I think Orton was much younger in his career than Edge was and needed this, as well as another honorable mention, the Undertaker feud, to put him over the edge in the eyes of the fans and maybe in the eyes of WWE management as well, as like, this is a guy we can trust as a main event superstar. You know, I've talked about this in videos, how I feel like this day and age, Austin Theory is that guy who just needs that one feud, needs that Foley feud, that Undertaker feud, like Orton had, to really put him over the edge in the eyes of the fans is like, this is somebody who's going to be established as a main event guy for years to come, because WWE has put him against John Cena and Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio and all these guys, but for some reason there's still something missing with Austin Theory. And some may say, well, that's so and so, or that's, you know, this problem or that problem with Theory himself. And I'm not saying Austin Theory is perfect, but you can't deny that there's immense amount of potential there. And Theory, I do believe, with that one little added ingredient, whether that's this epic feud with fill in the blank superstar or not, is going to be that guy one day. I really like Austin Theory. I see the world in him. And again, the reason I mention that is because I compare him more. He's always gotten the John Cena comparison, but I compare him more to a young Randy Orton. That's just what I see out of Austin Theory, and he needs that feud like Orton had back in the day with Foley and Taker. Two great feuds that really helped put Randy Orton over the edge and establish him as a main event guy in WWE. Those are just a couple of honorable mentions that didn't make the top 10 list. Thought, again, you know, they were worth mentioning because they were some great rivalries of the RA era. Before we get into this, guys, I want to remind you about the channel memberships here on the No Nation Wrestling YouTube channel. As you guys can see on your screen, we have the Backstage Pass tier, which gives you access to some badges and emojis that you can use in live chats as well as the comments of videos like this. You also get discounted merchandise. My merch store is linked down below in the description. And you also get early access to brand new videos. You know, sometimes videos are literally recorded, edited, uploaded, and, you know, they go out immediately. There's no time for early access. But in a situation like yesterday, where the Survivor Series predictions went up yesterday, well, you could have watched those 24 hours, you know, basically in advance if you were a channel member. So you get early access to new videos. And of course, there's the Premium Pass tier as well, which gives you all those previous perks, as well as a bonus Ruthless Discussions podcast episode each and every month, starting in the month of December. So be sure to hit the join button down below, become a channel member, and if you can't, no problem at all, hit the like button on this video, be sure to subscribe, doing me a solid, if you will, helping grow the No Nation Wrestling YouTube channel. But before we get into all that, go follow me over on social media at No Nation Vlogs. That is Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. We also have the No Nation Wrestling account on TikTok, so you can go follow me over there. But I think that's it for the housekeeping notes, if you will. Let's get in to the top 10 rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era. Alrighty, at number 10 on my list, and again, as I said at the top of this podcast, your list may be different, no problem at all. And I will hear an argument for maybe swapping the positions on the list of some of these feuds, but this is just how I personally feel right now. At number 10, Chris Benoit versus Kurt Angle. You know, this is a feud that really started in the Attitude Era. You know, they had plenty of matchups in the year 2000 and 2001. They fought at WrestleMania 17, you know, which is well known for a lot of people as being the greatest WrestleMania of all time. You know, mine would probably be, I just dropped my pen, one of the Ruthless Aggression Manias, you know, 19, you know, I'm biased too, 21, an epic one as well. But 17, absolutely a all-time at WrestleMania. They fought there, and they kind of had, you know, the tail end of their feud in the Ruthless Aggression era, but is the best part of their feud. Even though they had, you know, many a great matches before, the ante was really upped in the RA era. From they started feuding at the end of the summer 2002, then they bleed into this mismatched, you know, shooter tag team, as Paul Heyman has called them, where they can't get along. They're super entertaining along the way. They win the tag team championships. They're tearing it up with Los Guerreros, with Edge and Rey, the whole SmackDown 6, which we talked about on the podcast 2 weeks ago, talking about the 2002 Survivor Series. So great stuff there. And then, of course, Kurt Angle goes on to win the WWE Championship and then defends the title against Chris Benoit at Royal Rumble 2003, which is an all-timer matchup. One of the greatest non-Royal Rumble matches in Royal Rumble history, I would say. And, you know, I think Kurt Angle's on record at saying his best opponent ever is Chris Benoit. You know, the Royal Rumble 2003, one of his best matches, no doubt one of Chris Benoit's best matches as well. And I will say, man, like, I could very much see this match. Yeah, we just talked a lot about, you know, certain matches and certain stories putting guys over in the eyes of whether it's the fans or management one way or another as, you know, a guy who can be a main eventer, as, you know, somebody they can trust, this, that, and the third. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, this match was the match in the eyes of WWE management that said, we can put the world title on that guy one day. Because, of course, a year later, Benoit's winning the Royal Rumble matchup and going on to take down Triple H and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 20. Now, granted, Benoit Guerrero both getting that push at the same time. I'm sure it had a lot to do with Lesnar going out, Goldberg going out, Rock no longer being there, Austin on his way, basically already out the door. Like, WWE is in need of some main eventers come 2004, even after WrestleMania 20. But still, Chris Benoit, I'm sure this helped put him, you know, over the edge. No pun intended again, talking about Edge earlier on, as that guy who could be a main event player. And obviously, Benoit is mixing it up in the main event scene. He had fought The Rock. He had fought Triple H, Taker, all those guys throughout the Attitude Era. But, you know, 2003, this was basically the biggest match for Benoit that year. He was kind of just doing some mid-card stuff. It was still a main player on SmackDown throughout the year. But then 2004 is when Benoit becomes one of the top guys in the company as the World Heavyweight Champion. And I think the matches and the feud with Kurt Angle had a lot to do with Benoit reaching that spot eventually, at least in my eyes. So at number 10 on this list, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit. And if you've never seen the match from the Royal Rumble 2003, the Rumble's coming up in January. Give yourself a little watch of that whole event, but especially Angle and Benoit, because it's just a masterclass of a matchup. All right, at number 9 on my list, and I think this is going to be a surprise to some people. I don't think many people think of this when we talk about the greatest rivalries of the RA era, but it is a rivalry of the era, and it's not one guy versus one guy or a tag team feud or anything like that. It's the WWE versus ECW, straight up. Between 2005 and 2006, one of the hottest programs in the company was ECW invading, was eventually ECW coming back. Nothing was hotter than that at the time. 2005, you know, when the Dudleys and Rhino had already left for TNA, showing up on Monday Night Raw to build up for ECW One Night Stand. Sabu, who's also in TNA at the time, showing up to do One Night Stand. 2005 One Night Stand, an absolutely legendary event. I think it's probably better in comparison to 2006, but 2006 theme was more of a WWE versus ECW branded show, where 2005 was more of a, you know, just ECW throwback show with some WWE stuff involved. But like, that was a heated rivalry at the time that, again, I think a lot of people may not think about, you know, in a sense of greatest rivalries. You know, you think about, you know, the one-on-one matches and this, that, and third, but not necessarily the company versus company warfare that we had in 05 and 06. And again, it was just a lot of fun, man. You got, you know, the invasion on Monday Night Raw in 2005 with the Dudleys and Sandman and Rhino and those guys showing up. And then the lead up to the 2006 show as well was literally built around WWE versus ECW, RVD versus John Cena, Sabu versus Rey Mysterio, which might have ended in, you know, a not so hot fashion, but like literally a dream matchup. And it was an absolutely just awesome atmosphere and awesome match for Sabu and Rey that year. And then the whole, you know, lead up to 2006, again, just was brand versus brand, invasion versus invasion. They literally did, I think it was, you know, a week or two before One Night Stand 2006. It was on like a Wednesday night. They did a live, well, I don't know if it was live, it might have been taped, but they literally did a WWE versus ECW, excuse me, head-to-head special on like the USA Network with RVD versus Rey Mysterio. John Cena might have wrestled Sabu or something on that show. There was the Battle Royal where Big Show tears off his Raw shirt and he's got the ECW shirt underneath. Like, they did a whole show dedicated to WWE versus ECW before they even got to One Night Stand. So like, I think this was heated at the time. Definitely got a lot of people talking. And even though WWE, ECW, the brand itself, didn't pan out to be anything extraordinary, obviously, like, there's literally just downhill from week one. Like, there's no easy way to say it. Like, you just gotta be blunt. Like, the shit sucked. Even though I do believe what Paul Heyman is on record saying, you call that show anything else other than ECW and it succeeds. But the fact that it had ECW expectations on it, not gonna work. Just absolutely never stood a chance. But the overall programming of WWE versus ECW, one of my best memories from the Ruthless Aggression era, man. I remember being super excited when I was like, Sabu and Rey Mysterio. I barely knew who Sabu was at the time. Then I saw the match at One Night Stand and I was like, holy crap, that was freaking awesome. RVD won the WWE and ECW titles at the same time, even though it only lasted like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It wasn't that long at all, but it was still pretty cool for the time. So, man, WWE ECW, I felt, had to be on this list going in at the number 9 spot. All right, number 8 on the list. You want to talk about feuds that helped establish main event stars? Look no further than John Cena versus, where is he? He's right in the background there, hovering over me. And we got his action figure right there. John Bradshaw Layfield, at the time, the longest reigning WWE champion in SmackDown history. The wrestling god JBL, who, by the way, I'm going to save it for the Survivor Series podcast, but also an amazing commentator, in my personal opinion. JBL used to kill it when he had the headset on at ringside. But John Cena and JBL 2005, man, everybody remembers. This feud is probably most historic for not just John Cena winning the WWE Championship, because, of course, that's what it was centered around, but the I Quit match at Judgment Day 2005 with John Cena bleeding absolute buckets. I remember watching that match for the first time when I got the Judgment Day 2005 DVD, which was... The DVDs used to, you know, release like a month after the show happened. I mean, I guess maybe they still do, but just nobody cares anymore. So we're talking June 2005. I watched this for the first time on DVD. I got my little, little foldable DVD player. You guys know, I'm sure you all had them if you were watching back then. And I remember just being like, oh my God, and then try to recreate the match with my action figures, just without, you know, any blood. But it was awesome, man. Cena, this is definitely the feud that just puts him over the edge. Is like, this is gonna be the guy. And like, WWE knew it. They just needed to really build him up and then have that big moment at WrestleMania 21 to put the WWE Championship on him. And Cena's one of those guys, once he turned things around in late 2003, late 2002, early 2003, became the Dr. Thugonomics, just a nice, you know, rise to the top, as, you know, a lot of things should be. So many times throughout the years, I'm not just saying current WWE, I'm just saying in general, you'll see guys' momentum go like this on their way to the top. But once John Cena figured it out, it was slow. I don't want to say slow and steady, but it was just nice and steady to the top. You know, basically a jobber on SmackDown to mid-card guy, United States champion. Oh, he's feuding with Kurt Angle. Oh, he's feuding with The Undertaker. Oh, he's winning the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Like, Cena was one of those guys, man. At WrestleMania 21, you know, not necessarily the greatest match in the world, but WrestleMania 21, an overall great show. And it's just great for a lot of reasons, and one of those reasons is that is really where John Cena was born, at that show. Like, Dr. Thugonomics, a lot of people like that version of John Cena, love that version of Cena, I do as well. But WrestleMania 21, thanks to JBL and everybody wanting to see that title get taken off him after he held the title for like 9-10 months at the time, and Cena beating him for that show, just the night that put Cena on the map as the guy in WWE. And, you know, maybe that doesn't work out the same way if you don't have that polar opposite heel to John Cena against this red-hot babyface at the time. And, you know, maybe it just doesn't work out the same for Cena. I don't know. But Cena and JBL, some badass matches, especially the I Quit, as I mentioned, during their feud on SmackDown 2005. Definitely, I think, had to be on this list because of the significance of what it did for John Cena's career. Next up on the list, at number 7, I'm going Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle. This feud is literally SmackDown 2003. Like, it's definitely the feud of the year, in my opinion, for 2003 WWE. Because when you look at Monday Night Raw that year, it was Triple H on top, just defeating all the WCW guys, really. Like, Scott Steiner, Booker T, Kevin Nash, drops it to Goldberg, meaning the world title, then wins it right back. Like, Triple H is just dominating Monday Night Raw in 2003, and Lesnar and Angle were dominating on SmackDown as well, but they were telling a story with each other all throughout the year, from the Rumble to, you know, to Survivor Series that year. And I'm not saying there wasn't hiccups in between, not I would say hiccups, but moments in between where they weren't going at it, because they were, there was, but they always linked back up, man. You got Kurt Angle winning the title at the end of 2002, Brock goes on, wins the Royal Rumble 2003, it all leads up. Well, first it goes to No Way Out, where there's a 6-man tag. Of course, Edge gets taken out, so it ends up being a handicap match, Team Angle versus Lesnar and Benoit. All leads up to WrestleMania 19, where, of course, Lesnar wins the Undisputed Championship, and then Angle goes out for a couple of months, which, by the way, can I just sidetrack for a second, and then we'll get back on the Lesnar and Angle stuff. If you guys have never seen, I wrote this in my notes too, because I didn't want to, when I was writing down notes, I thought about it, talking about WrestleMania 19. If you guys have never seen the behind the scenes of WrestleMania 19, like the week of that they were filming, do yourself a favor and watch it. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere, but I know for a fact it's on, it's like a whole extra on the WrestleMania 20 DVD. Again, it's I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. I doubt it's on Peacock or something like that. But it's this whole, I want to say maybe it's an hour, maybe it's longer, maybe it's less, I don't know. But it's a behind the scenes documentary on a couple of guys leading up to WrestleMania 19, the week of, some of the layover. And it's really focused, at least from what I remember, I'm sure it's on some other guys, on Stone Cold Steve Austin and Kurt Angle. And just the hell, basically, that these guys were going through the week of WrestleMania. Like, Stone Cold had his own problems. Did he have a heart attack that weekend? Like, before, like, the dude was all messed up on tons of coffee and stress and Red Bulls or whatever the hell he was saying. And then, you know, just because of the stress of having to, you know, perform in his last match with The Rock. And then Kurt Angle has all his neck issues going on. And I think there's, like, some scary situation with Kurt Angle, like, 2 days or the night before WrestleMania 19 or whatever the hell in his hotel room. Like, it's crazy, dude. You guys got to go watch that if you never did it. And I honestly say watch it because I feel like it adds a layer of appreciation for not only, you know, like everything else, like the Austin stuff. And I feel like the documentary might have focused on other guys as well. Maybe Taker a little bit, maybe Shawn. But the stuff I'm thinking of, you know, Austin and Angle, it just adds some appreciation for, you know, the Lesnar and Angle matchup at Mania 19, which I think people forget is a really great matchup. Like, a lot of people talk about, you know, the shooting star press at the end. That's why people remember it. And I get it, because it's like one of the biggest, like, oh my god, scary moments of WrestleMania history. Of course it worked out, so like we can look at it now and just be like, man, that was crazy, right? Like, you know, just like some shit that happened at a barbecue 20 years ago. Like, yeah, you almost died, but you didn't. It's all right. I don't know. But like, it just adds a new appreciation, man, for what those guys did on that night. Go watch it nonetheless. And then Angle goes out after WrestleMania 19, I think he gets neck surgery, and he's back in, like, June. And then I think Angle wins the title in the Lesnar Big Show, and then himself, Triple Threat at Vengeance. They go on to have a rematch at SummerSlam, meaning the WrestleMania 19 rematch with Kurt and Lesnar. They have a 60-minute Iron Man match, which is great, September of 2003 on SmackDown. And then just when you think it's over, like, Lesnar goes on to fight Undertaker at No Mercy the following month. Angle goes on to fight John Cena the following month at No Mercy. Then they link back up at Survivor Series for Team Angle versus Team Lesnar. Just the feud of the year in 2003. So many great matches, great moments. Had to be on this list, man. And like this, like, you might be able to make the argument that Kurt Angle is Brock's greatest rival. Like, if not the top 1-2, like, maybe somebody will say, if somebody says Roman Reigns, like, give me a fucking break. Because like, there's a difference between like longevity of a story and match quality versus just like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but like, I know Lesnar's wrestled Roman a lot, several years, this, that, and the third, but like, the quality, the substance of their rivalry does not match up to Lesnar and Angle. So please save me. Roman Reigns is Brock Lesnar's greatest rivalry, because he's not. I'm sorry. I know they've had some good matches. They've had some great matches. Freaking WrestleMania 31, SummerSlam 2022, everything in between, I'll do without. That's just me. Lesnar and Angle, I would say Angle, probably Lesnar's greatest rival. Maybe Cena, maybe Taker. There's some other guys I can hear an argument for. I would personally say, if you just ask me, we're not even talking about it, you just come up to me on the street, who's Brock Lesnar's greatest rival? I'm saying Kurt Angle. I think the rivalry of the year in 2003 had to be on this list at number 7. Moving on from there, we are at, what are we at? Number 6. I made my notes with like what rivalries, like we're going to make the top 10. Like on my computer, but I didn't write down the numbers. I have the numbers written down on my notebook right here. That's why I'm looking here than looking here. Not that you guys care, just saying. But we're at number 6 on the list, and you gotta have on here Batista versus Triple H. Now, there's another Batista feud you may be thinking of. Some people, I think, forget about it, just like they forgot about the... We'll save that. I don't want to spoil it. But there's another Batista feud that some people may be thinking should be on this list. We'll get there. Spoiler alert. But Batista versus Triple H absolutely had to be on this list. You know, John Cena, again, he had his counterpart in JBL that helped establish him as that main event guy. But not just the match with Triple H at WrestleMania 21, but the slow burn lead up really just made the breakout of Evolution moment for Batista just that much greater, man. I remember specifically, and it's actually in one of my favorite video packages of all time, which is leading up to Survivor Series 2004, but there is a backstage clip on Monday Night Raw from late 04 leading up to Survivor Series where Triple H and Batista are talking in the Evolution locker room. Triple H leaves, Batista just grabs the world title and is looking at it. And just those little things, just like how we talk about nowadays, planting the seeds, long-term booking, storytelling, all that stuff, they were doing it for Batista and Triple H. At least I think they were, you know, in a sense. Maybe there was a backup plan, maybe something was going to change, because there is that story that has recently resurfaced that Edge was supposed to win the world title at Taboo Tuesday 2004 if he got voted in by the fans. That's evidently, Edge has said it himself. So if he's saying it, I assume it's a shoot. Edge said, and you can find the interview because it's years old, it just resurfaced recently. Edge said that the fans, if the fans voted him in, and WWE were like confident that Edge was going to get voted in, he didn't. Shawn Michaels got voted in. I think Edge and Benoit had a just a non-title match on Taboo Tuesday 04. Edge goes into a heel turn eventually, like the week after, or at least starts getting there. But if Edge were to be voted in at Taboo Tuesday 2004 to fight Triple H for the world title, Edge says he was supposed to beat Triple H, and how that changes the trajectory of so much on Raw during that time is kind of crazy. Now, thinking about it, like, Triple H just ends up retaining the world title against Shawn Michaels. Eventually, the title gets vacated through a bunch of chaos, and they have a New Year's Revolution, they have an Elimination Chamber match where Triple H wins the title back. The knowledge is right here, guys. The knowledge is right here. Also, if I'm talking fast, I did just have a Zoa that I stole from my mother, but she said I could have it, so that's why I'm talking fast. And now I'm trying to cool it down. You see how that works? But it is kind of crazy how things might have changed. Maybe Edge was still maybe the title still would have been vacated had Edge won the title. I don't know, but that's just a funny story. But nonetheless, they were planting the seeds for Batista and Triple H leading up to Mania 21. And Batista wins the Rumble. Triple H is trying to get him to jump to SmackDown so they can walk down the aisle at WrestleMania 21, champion and champion Evolution, running the world. And then one of the greatest moments in Monday Night Raw history, Batista powerbomb to Triple H. Batista bomb. What move is it? Pick one. Batista bomb to Triple H through the table during the contract signing. Fights Triple H at WrestleMania 21. All-timer Raw moment there. And the WrestleMania 21 match is great. I haven't watched it in a while, but it is a very solid matchup. At least for me and my taste, I do like it a lot. Batista, of course, ends up going over. And, like, say what you want about Triple H, man, and over the years, and being selfish with one guy and not with the other, and not wanting to put this dude over, and not letting him look weak, and everything, this, that, and the third, that people have said about the game. Maybe some of it's true, maybe some of it's not, doesn't matter. But Batista certainly did not get a selfish version of Triple H in 2005. Triple H couldn't have been more selfless against the Animal that year. Puts him over in the main event of WrestleMania 21. For the World Heavyweight Champion. And, you know, you could say the same about, like, Chris Benoit the year before. So there's definitely examples where we can take our hats off for Triple H here. Just saying, you know, everyone wants to hate on the guy back then. I'm a Triple H fan. Nonetheless, puts Batista over at WrestleMania 21. Does it again at Backlash. And then does it again at Vengeance in one of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches of all time. They just beat the hell out of each other, did Batista and Triple H. And then, of course, Batista goes to SmackDown, does his thing. This, that, and the third, but, like, without Triple H, Batista is not the same guy. Like, Batista's rise to the top does not happen without Triple H making him look like $1 million. Not just in the feud, but in, you know, the 2 years, year change, whatever, of Evolution. Like, Triple H did wonders for Batista, and Batista, you know, one of my personal favorite guys of all time, in my top three. And, you know, I'm going to talk about that in the Survivor Series podcast for Survivor Series 06. But being there for Batista, relinquishing that world championship that he won against Triple H at WrestleMania 21, being there for him relinquishing that title in 2006, and then 11 months later being there for him winning the title back, maybe just some of the reasons why Batista's, you know, one of my favorite guys of all time. Just brings me a lot of good childhood memories. But Batista and Triple H, man, great stuff. And there's even a clip, if you go, I'm sure, and again, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube now, but it's a extra on the Vengeance 2005 DVD where Triple H is getting looked at backstage after the Hell in a Cell match. Batista comes in and is basically just like, it's over, I won. And they hug it out. Triple H gives him his respect, squash the beef, and like that. I don't know if they showed it on Raw the next night. Like, I obviously forget. I don't know when the last time I watched the night after Vengeance 2005 Raw was. Sue me. But, you know, they might have showed that on television, but I think it is, it was cool. Like, Triple H just being like, yeah, you know, you won. You beat my ass 3 pay-per-views in a row. You're the man. You're the world champ. Like, all that stuff. Batista and Triple H, man, great feud in 2005, helping establish Batista 1,000%. Triple H, give him his respect. Or wait a minute, let me say the phrase that everybody likes to say now. Ever since CM Punk said it in his AEW promo a couple years ago, everybody likes to say this phrase, so let me be in with the crowd. Give Triple H his flowers. Everybody likes to say that nowadays. Give Triple H his flowers, because he deserves it. All right, what do we got next on this list? Number 5. We are halfway. I just had a sip of Zoa. Sorry, I'm just a mess over here. This is kind of low-key why I like the podcast, because I could just be myself. Not that I'm not myself in the videos, but like I'm trying to keep it kind of short. I'm trying to move along. These podcasts, we're going to get to points in this podcast where you guys are just going to be like, are we even talking about wrestling anymore? You know what I mean? Nonetheless, where do we leave off? Number five on this list, Y2J Chris Jericho versus the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. I think this is well remembered for being one of the best rivalries of the era. I see this talked about constantly on social media, and a lot of people look towards the ladder match at No Mercy, which of course is a classic, but this, that whole year, man, like I would say, it's hard to say what the feud of the year was in 2008, Jericho or Shawn Michaels, or Jericho versus Shawn Michaels, or Edge versus The Undertaker. And then even on top of that, like, just the whole story of Jeff Hardy's rise to the WWE Championship that year, fantastic stuff. Like, there's some 2008 is an amazing year, in my personal opinion, in the history of WWE, a year that deserves some appreciation. But Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, definitely one of the reasons why, and definitely one of the best feuds of that year. And just a slow but sure story, you know what I mean? Like, Jericho's a babyface, you know, this is just a couple months after he comes back to the WWE, where after WrestleMania 24, and Jericho, Michaels, and then even Batista are all getting involved with each other, and Jericho basically takes issue with Shawn for being like a liar. You know, Shawn Michaels faked a knee injury to get out of his, or to secure a victory, I should say, against Batista in their Backlash 2008 matchup, which Jericho was the special guest referee of, and Jericho didn't really take too kindly of it. Kind of felt like it made him look like an idiot and whatnot. And then that leads to a match at Judgment Day, which that, off the top of my head, I forget who won, but I want to say it was Shawn Michaels, but I may be wrong there. Doesn't really matter for the just the sake of the conversation right now. And they were still kind of, and that was still, you know, babyface versus babyface for the most part. Jericho didn't really turn heel yet, but then we eventually get the final highlight reel ever, which in my opinion is another just great Raw moment in the history of Monday Night Raw. Jericho smashing Shawn Michaels' head through the Jeritron 2000, 3000, which one was it? I think it was the 2000, putting Shawn Michaels' head right through the Tron, which leads to a big part of this storyline, which is Shawn Michaels in a busted up, barely visible, you know, eye, just all kinds of messed up. Eventually leads to Shawn almost having to retire in the feud after Jericho beats the hell out of him at Great American Bash 2008, which was a bloodbath, at least for Shawn Michaels, from what I remember. And it kind of happened just in time, because that happens at the Great American Bash 2008. Michaels is bleeding profusely, you know, cut over the eye, whatever, that's already been messed up because of the prior events. And then, what, a week, 2 weeks later, whatever, WWE goes PG. So, like, they got that in, like, right at the end of the PG era. And then, I remember SummerSlam, neither of them are wrestling, but Michaels comes out to basically, like, say he's gonna retire because Jericho messed him up so bad. Jericho's like, nah, 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 you ain't going out like that. I forget his exact words. Ends up accidentally punching Shawn Michaels' wife in the mouth. She gets a fat lip. Just great stuff. Great storytelling. They go on sanctioned match at Unforgiven, which Shawn Michaels goes over, but Jericho gets the last laugh on that night, winning the world title, and then that leads to the No Mercy matchup in 2008. Just great stuff. And yeah, we failed to mention the fact that they really had two separate rivalries throughout the RA era. Of course, 2008, I think, is what's most remembered, but they also talk, or I should say, we should also talk about 2003, where, of course, they wrestled at WrestleMania 19, and then they were in a six-man tag the following month at Backlash, but it basically fizzles out after that. Obviously not as long and drawn out of a storyline as the 2008 storyline, and I mean that in the best way. You know, 2008 was great, as I mentioned, but WrestleMania 19, fantastic match between Jericho and Shawn Michaels, just a great wrestling contest. Another match that, for some reason, you know, I know a lot, I've realized, like, a lot of younger fans seem to watch my channel. I could tell by just the comments on some of the videos. So for some reason, if you guys are watching this, you're a younger fan of the WWE, go back and watch Jericho and Shawn Michaels in 2003. Just great stuff. Michaels and Jericho absolutely had to make this list. Number four on this list, I think this is a rivalry that is probably on everybody's list. I'd be surprised if it's not for the Ruthless Aggression era, but it had to be on mine. Edge versus Matt Hardy. Probably thought I was going to say John Cena. Not just yet. Edge versus Matt Hardy, dude. I mean, you can't get more of a personal rivalry than literally taking real life events and saying, this is so hot, let's put it on television. And, like, I know this is completely old news, but it's still to this day is good, and I'm gonna keep thinking this for years on end. It really is crazy that Edge, Matt Hardy, and Lita can shut up and go do business for WWE and make absolutely fantastic television, and the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and CM Punk could not. And I'm a CM Punk fan. I think CM Punk, you know, probably wasn't in the wrong for the most part. For the most part. Not saying he wasn't. But just, you know, speaks volumes on maturity all the way around. Edge, Matt Hardy, and Lita can do business. Some other people couldn't. Listen, everybody's got their own thing. But, I mean, to take that real-life drama and put it on WWE television literally led to 3-4 months of fantastic matches and segments between Edge and Hardy. Matt Hardy jumping Edge on Raw before he officially gets rehired in 2005. I thought it was shoot. I didn't know any better at the time. I was like, yo, he just invaded Raw, dude. He just jumped Edge, freaking pulled his punk card out and said, let's fight. Like, I thought it was shoot, dude. Like, it was crazy. The SummerSlam 05 match, you know, I it's funny because I just talked about in the last podcast how Lesnar and Big Show at Survivor Series 2002, one of the greatest shortest matches of all time, if not the greatest shortest match of all time. Edge and Matt Hardy, I'm not saying it's up there as one of the greatest, but it's certainly a memorable one, dude. They went out there for 5 minutes at SummerSlam 2005, beat each other up. Edge spears Matt Hardy through the ropes, drops him on the ring post. Matt Hardy's bleeding. Buckets in the ring, referee stoppage. Like, it was 5 minutes, and I remember it to this day because it was epic. They go on, have that badass steel cage match at Unforgiven, which, of course, everybody remembers for the most part from Matt Hardy dropping that leg drop off the top, which is still insane to this day. Matt Hardy, like, thank you for your sacrifices, because that literally is insane. A leg drop from the top of the cage, nothing breaking his fall, not going through a table, nothing, just a straight leg drop from the top to the ring is insane to me. Like, that's more damaging than going through a table or a ladder, I would assume, but, like, no give. Like, that's insane to me still to this day. And then, of course, they go on, have the ladder match on Raw Homecoming. Edge's Money in the Bank contract's on the line. Loser leaves Raw. Edge, of course, wins the match. Matt Hardy gets forced to leave the brand. But I will say, pure magic was this feud. You know, really just showed the maturity of everybody here. My one knock against this feud, it's really not, I shouldn't say a knock against this feud, it's the follow-up to this feud. Because, of course, Edge goes on, cashes in Money in the Bank a few months later, WWE champ, all that stuff. They send Matt Hardy to SmackDown, which I get, because, like, having these guys on the same show, it's one of those instances where, like, why wouldn't they keep fighting? Like, you have to separate them eventually. It's like Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy a few years later. It's like Dominic and Ryan. It's like Jay and Jimmy. Like, sometimes when feuds are so personal and so close, you know, to heart, like, you have to separate them to kind of stop the feud. So, like, Matt Hardy going to SmackDown then made a ton of sense. My only knock looking back is Matt Hardy was so red hot as one of the legitimately one of the most popular guys in the company, and then they set him to SmackDown and don't do jack shit with him. And it kind of feels like, well, so they re-signed him just to have this red hot feud with Edge because they knew it'd be business, but they didn't think about the aftermath, unfortunately. Like, they send Matt Hardy to SmackDown and the dude's losing to JBL, who granted was like a top guy at the time, don't get me wrong, but like losing to JBL in the opening match of Armageddon December 2005, when he was, like, one of the top guys on Raw a few months prior. And then, like, Matt Hardy doesn't really go on to do much of anything. He's just a mid-card guy on SmackDown for, you know, most of 2006. And then Jeff Hardy comes back. We get, you know, Team Extreme, Hardy Boys reunion for a couple of months. And then, you know, that's just kind of, you know, Matt Hardy's career just, you know, as he said in his promo, or at least one of his promos with Jeff Hardy a few years later, he has had a mediocre career while Jeff Hardy skyrocketed to the top. To no fault of his own, Matt Hardy, I would say one of the most underrated guys of the Ruthless Aggression era. Definitely could have capitalized on more for Matt Hardy in 2006 coming out of this feud with Edge. But nonetheless, Edge and Matt Hardy had to be on this list. Just one of the most legendary rivalries of all time. And a feud that I think really put Edge over the top is, like, that dastardly son of a bitch. Like, if without Matt Hardy, without this whole situation, is Edge really the rated R superstar that we came to know? Like, this feud put Edge in that spot, like, as the heel in WWE. And, like, being a kid at the time, not knowing any better, and, like, obviously it was real life stuff that then got turned into WWE television, but I was just like, what is going on right now? I didn't even understand. I was like, wait, he was with her, and now he's with, and now she's with him, and then their fight. I was like, it was crazy, dude. Matt Hardy and Edge absolutely had to be on this list at number 4. All right, number three on this list, and I briefly touched on it earlier, but didn't want to get too into it, but putting this on the list absolutely was going to be a decision that I made. Batista versus The Undertaker, still to this day, it was the same back then, and still to this day, I feel like they don't get enough respect. Literally, the World Heavyweight Championship match between the two top guys on SmackDown, the legend of The Undertaker, the Animal Batista, the champion at the time, and these guys were placed fifth at WrestleMania 23 during a time where, like, no, like we just saw Rollins and McIntyre opening up Crown Jewel. It's a different day and age. I get it, I'm not here to talk about that, but like in 2007, you weren't seeing world titles thrown in the middle of the show. Like maybe there was a buffer match if it was WrestleMania or a big pay-per-view. Like maybe they'd put a buffer match in there, but seeing Undertaker and Batista fifth at WrestleMania 23 is still bonkers to me to this day. And I think somebody's on record saying it. Maybe it's Batista, maybe it's Taker, maybe it's somebody who was on SmackDown at the time. I don't know. But evidently they were on so early because they didn't think it was going to be as good as it was. And they literally went out there, and I don't want to say stole the show, because obviously you had Shawn Michaels and John Cena in the main event, which is a fantastic match as well. But they definitely surprised the hell out of a lot of people. And from what I remember, it wasn't a super long match. Maybe 15 minutes or something along those lines. But they went out there and absolutely killed it, man. And my favorite part about this feud, which was really the feud of 2007, like there's a hiatus in the middle of it because there's so many injuries on SmackDown, which I'll talk about in a second, so it puts a pause in the feud. But like my favorite thing about this is there was no heel turns. It was just these are the two top guys on SmackDown for the top belt fighting it out. Like there was no Batista turning heel on Undertaker or trying to force, you know, somebody to get booed or anything like that. It was just like cheer for who you want, but these are the two top guys fighting for the richest prize, and that's how it should be sometimes. They kill it at WrestleMania 23. Taker wins the title. They got a badass last man standing match at Backlash just a few weeks later, not even the following month, which goes to a no contest because Batista spears Undertaker off the stage. Great stuff. Then they go into a steel cage match on SmackDown, which ends in a draw. And of course, Undertaker goes out with injury. Mark Henry takes him out. Edge cashes in Money in the Bank, which is supposed to be Mr. Kennedy. You know, 2007, obviously remembered, you know, especially that time period for the Chris Benoit stuff, unfortunately. But, like, even without putting the Benoit stuff aside, like, WWE was plagued with injuries the summer of 2007. Kennedy goes out hurt. Edge eventually goes out hurt. Taker's out hurt. You know, this is the middle of 2007. Jericho's not back yet. Big Show just left like 6 months ago. Shawn Michaels goes out on injury or hiatus. Triple H is still out to the end of the summer. Rey Mysterio is still out till the end of the summer. Like, they were struggling in 2007. And it showed because the Great Khali ends up winning the world title. But then, of course, end of the summer, Unforgiven, I should say. Batista wins back the title. Taker comes back from injury. Once we get through the conclusion to Batista and Khali at No Mercy, which I'm surprised they even bothered going another month when they really didn't have to, we end up getting Batista and The Undertaker again 2007 at Cyber Sunday. Stone Cold gets voted in as the referee, which was sick. And that show, I believe, they main evented. I think they knew, like, all right, we can send Batista and Taker, like, they can be in the main event. Like, it's that badass. And then the following month, they have a Hell in a Cell match at Survivor Series, which I don't see talked about that often when it comes to Hell in a Cell matches. But I think it's a banger. I don't know. I would have to, that's the second time I dropped my pen. I would have to go back and watch them like back to back to pick which one's my favorite between Batista and Taker and Batista and Triple H. But nonetheless, like we don't need to compare. They're both badass. And of course, Edge comes back in the end, sets up the triple threat for Armageddon, which is another great matchup. Like anything Batista and Taker did with each other in 2007 was great. Every time they're in the ring, it was a banger. To this day, I don't think it gets the overall rivalry. I don't think it gets the respect it deserves. Then it didn't get the respect it deserves until after we got into late 2007, where now Cena's on the shelf. We know, all right, Batista and Taker, like, they're going to go out there and give us something good. We can put it in the main event. I think it's an underrated feud. One of my personal favorite feuds. Batista, as I said earlier, just one of my favorite guys. Number three on this list. Absolutely. I love their matches with each other. I think they have better. I think Batista and Triple H had great matches. I think Batista and Taker, overall, not just talking about the Hell in a Cell match, overall, I think had better matches. So at number three on the list, Batista and The Undertaker. Number two on the greatest ruthless aggression rivalries of all time list. You guys know it was going to be on here, or at least you should. Rey Mysterio, and Eddie Guerrero. Now, I know some people still look back and go, man, what were they thinking with that whole Dominic storyline? And I'll admit, maybe it was a little over the top. But my favorite part of the whole thing is the fact that Eddie and Rey were so good at selling it that, one, it didn't seem as weird. Like, some people just wouldn't be able to put having a child involved in this storyline. And some people wouldn't be able to deliver that in such a serious manner that they did back in 2005. But the whole underlining thing was that Eddie was just trying to play mind games on Rey so he could finally prove that he can defeat Rey Mysterio. And that's good storytelling right here. Eddie Guerrero just being a sadistic, obsessed with beating Rey Mysterio heel. He literally got his own son involved to try to throw Rey off his game. And it still didn't work. That's still, you know, just some of my favorite underlining factors of that storyline, man. And just, you want to talk about just series on series of great matches, which are a lot of the cases with some of these feuds in this list, just match after match, which are just bangers. I mean, you look at WrestleMania 21, that is the match. That match, Rey and Eddie on that night, is the reason I'm sitting here talking about wrestling to this day. Like, I go back and watch it every year. WrestleMania 21 itself is always on my rewatch list in the lead up to WrestleMania, but Eddie and Rey, just one of my all-time favorite matches from WrestleMania 21. Both baby faces, tag team champs going into it, and they just absolutely have a great wrestling matchup. And then afterwards is when we get the Eddie Guerrero heel turn. And this is some of the stuff I want to see as Santos Escobar in this feud that we currently have going on SmackDown. You know, in the lead up to and once Rey's back, I want to see some of that just sadistic, just like, you made me do it, Rey. Just heel come out of Escobar that Eddie Guerrero had back in the day. I think it would be great. So, I mean, we already saw it a little bit, but let's keep it going. Keep it going. That's what I want to see on SmackDown in this day and age. But again, the whole underlining basis of this feud was that Eddie needed to prove to himself that he could beat Rey Mysterio. He was better than Rey Mysterio, and no matter if it was tag team champs at WrestleMania 21, turn and heel, he still couldn't beat Rey at Judgment Day that year. I think Rey won technically by disqualification, but still, Eddie loses the matchup. They go and fight at the Great American Bash. Rey just pulls out a victory. I think like just a small package, crucifix pin, something like that. Like just sneaks away. And of course, by then, Dominic's involved. They go on to have the custody of Dominic ladder match at SummerSlam that year. Which is just great, man. I absolutely love that matchup. Just a badass ladder matchup at SummerSlam that year, which has been immortalized in action figures. I have all three of them lined up. Eddie, Dominic, Rey, riding the Detolf right there. Somebody remind me, I'll post a picture over on Instagram. But there's also a promo leading up to that SummerSlam match where they're just going at each other. It's where they set up the match for SummerSlam, the ladder match, and Rey literally just calls Eddie Guerrero a chicken shit, and it's just fire, dude. Like, this is probably the first time this feud where we really saw a new side of Rey. And you know, I keep saying this a couple of times throughout this podcast today, but, and maybe the circumstances would have been different. Obviously, I do think there was a, you know, big reason why Rey was in the spot he was in 2006. One was because of Eddie's passing. Two was because Batista was injured. But definitely, you know, you look at this feud and go, all right, well, this pretty much established Rey as being, you know, versatile on the card. He can open up in the cruiserweight division, or he can also be in the main event. I think it's a big part of this feud with Eddie Guerrero. Nothing but badass matches, great promos along the way, emotional storytelling. And then Eddie finally beats Rey on a SmackDown in September of 05. Great steel cage match. Or was it October? No, it was September. It was September, which I remember vividly watching in the living room, one of those big freaking TVs. I forget what the exact names of them were called. Rey's wearing silver gear. I remember watching it on Friday Night SmackDown back in 2005. And you know, it is one of those things where you look back and go, y'all, obviously Eddie's passing came just a few months after this, but pretty cool that, you know, he basically spent the last year of his career, you know, outside of the little feud with Batista right before he passed, with, you know, wrestling his best friend. Like, that's something pretty cool in retrospect. And then you look at, you know, Dominic being involved back in 2005, and then look at Dominic, you know, nowadays, also pretty cool thing in retrospect. So Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, just two guys that I think helped define the era overall. And then this storyline, maybe the storyline of 2005, I mean, this Edge and Matt Hardy, you know, Batista and Triple H, you know, 2005, another great year in WWE, man. 2008, 2005, maybe my favorite years of the era. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. That could be a whole podcast on its own. Just me sitting here, no thoughts prior, no notes. Just literally just trying to in my head rank the years of the RA era and list of favoritism. But nonetheless, number two on this list, Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. And finally, at number one on my personal top 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression Era list, you guys probably know where I'm going with this. It's like the only major rivalry that I've left out at this point. That is Edge and John Cena. I mean, this, you want to talk about two guys that just define the era? Look no further than Edge and John Cena. They're each other's greatest rivals, in my personal opinion. If you can make the argument for John Cena and Randy Orton, and I'd hear you, I have no problem, you know, if somebody disagrees with Edge and Cena and they prefer Cena and Orton as Cena's greatest rivalry. But to me, it's Cena and Edge, man. They're just the perfect polar opposites. They help make each other, establish each other as stars in 2006 as main event level players. Edge was the Joker to John Cena's Batman. He was the supervillain to Cena's superhero. That they both needed at the time. Like, Edge coming off the Matt Hardy feud, cashing in Money in the Bank, being WWE champion, he needed that top, you know, baby face. And obviously people started to turn on Cena in 2005, 2006. So I understand, like, maybe every single crowd wasn't the same. And a lot of people would cheer Edge from time to time, but Edge needed that top babyface to really help establish himself as that top heel coming out of, you know, a heated program with Matt Hardy in 2005. And on the other case, you know, Cena's built up to fight Triple H at WrestleMania 22. Cena needed that guy again to help establish him. And it wasn't just that, you know, that those 3-week program that they had in early 2006. You look past WrestleMania 22, and I would say Cena and Edge, probably the feud of 2006. We've said that a lot with certain years on this podcast today. You know, I just talked about a couple that could be the rivalry of the year of 2005, but I think Cena and Edge just absolutely has to be the number one rivalry of 2006. Once they kicked back into the feud during the summertime, which I'm going to guess maybe went a little differently than originally planned, because RVD was the WWE champion, and then I think the story is like RVD and Sabu got pulled over because they were smoking weed or something, and then the Monday after, RVD gets the WWE title pulled off him, then the next night gets the ECW title pulled off him, then I think he's suspended. So, like, I don't know how things might have panned out differently. I think they were actually leading up to the same triple threat match that they ended up maybe just moving up. Regardless, I'm not going back and recapping July of 2006 Monday Night Raw. But regardless, Edge ends up winning the WWE title again. They trade wins, back and forth in each other's hometowns at SummerSlam and Unforgiven. And that TLC match, man, just a phenomenal TLC match. Seeing Cena out of his element, Edge, you know, back in his hometown, 2 years after he was booed out of the building in his hometown, now he returns as, you know, Toronto's favorite son. It's a fantastic matchup, man. And even though the rivalry ends there, they always link back up. 2007, they wrestled, you know, several times. 2008, they linked back up, at least at the draft episode that year. I think they go one-on-one, and I think even the Slammy Awards, which I was at, but I'm forgetting off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure it was Cena and Edge in the main event at that show. And really the only detriment to Cena and Edge throughout there, I don't even want to say detriment, but the only like miss is that they never had that one-on-one match at WrestleMania that they always should have had. You know, WrestleMania 25 was the closest we got. No disrespect to the Big Show, I got a soft spot for the guy, I love the Big Show, but you know, he was kind of the oddball in there and kind of, you know, threw that off. But WrestleMania 25, Edge and Cena, that should have been the matchup. But Edge and Cena, man, just helped make each other, absolutely. I think if you look at any other feud during the Ruthless Aggression Era on this list, even, you know, you can swap names, you can swap, you know, I think this one should be 2, I think this one should be 4 on the list, so forth, and so on, you guys get the point. But Cena and Edge, I just don't think you can make an argument. Like, these guys just personified the Ruthless Aggression Era. Cena's basically the face of the era, and Cena needed the feud with JBL, the feud with Edge, you know, Triple H and Shawn Michaels putting him over. He needed these milestones to establish him as the face of the company. And you take Edge out of there, Cena's not the same guy. Just like, I don't think, you know, I said earlier, you know, you take Triple H away from Batista, Batista's not the same guy. It's just fantastic stuff. And I think they even did there's so many different series on Peacock. I don't know what it's told. Maybe it's Untold or I don't know what the series is called, but there's a whole like 45 minute hour half hour, whatever it is, like recap of Edge and John Cena talking about their feud in 2006 on Peacock. And it's really good stuff. I'm pretty sure Cena gets emotional during it because he's just like, Edge is the freaking man. And Edge talks about, you know, working with Cena and talks about the stuff with Cena's dad where he slaps him and it being so bad that Vince McMahon didn't even want to air it. And then Edge was like, how about no volume and I'll just, you know, narrate the whole thing, whatever he said, ad lib the whole thing. Great stuff. You should go watch it if you haven't. But Edge and John Cena, when you talk about the 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era, I think absolutely has to be number one on that list. And that will do it for the top 10 greatest rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era. Against my personal list, again, if yours is different, no problem at all. Drop it down below in the comments. And once more, I want to remind you guys that this is the first of two Ruthless Discussions podcasts that are going up on your Thanksgiving Day. We will also be dropping another one later tonight, doing a little retro review of the 2006 Survivor Series event. Got the DVD right there to showcase a little bit more in the second podcast later today. And also got my ticket because I was at the show. It's out of focus right now, but we'll go over all that and I'll show it again in tonight's podcast. Really looking forward to doing that one. Going to be recording it basically right after this one. But again, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's podcast. A little bit late. This was supposed to go out last week. Technical difficulties pushed it aside. Now we're having a banger double upload episode, whatever. You guys get the point, on Thanksgiving Day. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe down below, hit the like button, and go follow me across all social medias at Noah Nation Vlogs on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And there's also the separate Noah Nation Wrestling account on TikTok as now as well. So you can go follow me across all those platforms. Ruthless Discussion Podcast, Episode 7 in the books. Episode 8 coming your way later tonight. Again, I hope you guys enjoyed, and I'll see you guys soon. Peace.